It's the dictionary.
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 Hello, word nerds. Welcome to another episode of The Dictionary. This episode is being recorded on June 5th in the afternoon, 4:45 in the afternoon. We have been trying to schedule this on multiple occasions. It hasn't worked out until now, and we got to do it because this is going up in like a week. So we got to get this one. We got to get it out the door to the people. So I have with me a wonderful, wonderful guest. Dan Brooks, how are you doing?
I'm very good. I'm very good. Happy to be here. Finally, we got that going. Yeah. Yes, and to the viewers at home, I actually lost power about an hour ago too. So it was like, what next is going to happen here? But yes, we're going to make this happen.
Couple of weeks ago, we started to record. It took a while to get into Zencastr. I don't think you ever even got into Zencastr. We were having tech problems. I think we ended up trying Zoom, and then we had some other tech problems, and we're like, nope, we got to push this back to another day.
Yeah,
but we made it. We're here. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and what do you do? Why do you have this fancy microphone set up, and maybe a little bit about why you're on this episode today?
Sure. Well, I was a recording engineer, songwriter. I guess I'm still still songwriter. And so for about 14 years, my brother Jeffrey and his wife Teresa and I, we had a recording studio, which was our own business. And kind of one of those things I kind of jumped into at a relatively young age. And it was a very fun experience. In the end, we were a little, we were in kind of a funny transitional time. It's like that moment in Almost Famous where Philip Seymour Hoffman was, you know, Lester Bangs, and he's talking, he's like, you're coming in at a weird moment in rock and roll here. You got to understand, you know, and that was kind of what happened for us because we were coming in the late 90s, early aughts. And that was a period where you basically had the recording software is getting really quite good to the point now where it's, I find it almost indistinguishable as to what's being recorded in a major studio, what's being recorded at home, just judging from the amount of stuff you can do to sort of fake it, if you will. And so what happened was what you're left with is the people who record in their, you know, in their homes, which sounds, like I said, fantastic now. And then you have what I would call like the space station places, you know, which are these enormous astro lounges where you've got like, you know, dozens of studio rooms and, you know, hundreds of guitars and amps to choose from, like a quiver of keyboards and various approaches. You've got, you know, lounges and kitchens and places to sleep at night, you know, it's the whole experience. And those are for the big, big bands. So somebody like your Taylor Swift is going to have something like that. Although maybe they eschew that. But, you know, but those are the ones that are left, is the very small people who do themselves, maybe a couple of friends, and then the biggins. And so I can, the middle guys, which, you know, for existed for a very long time, especially in the Chicagoland area, which is where I'm from, were kind of squeezed out. But that's okay, because I still write some music, and now I have a podcast. I help out on several, but this is my main one, is Projectsploitation, which is my sort of passion and fun thing I do.
That's awesome. And just to say the name again, because it doesn't necessarily roll off the tongue, Projectsploitation, right?
Yes. Yes.
And
Projectsploitation.
Like kind of the word project and exploitation. We'll probably talk a little bit more about this later, but like, what's the reason for the combination of those words?
Yes, it's in fact, for you word nerds, it's a portmanteau, which is a word I don't get to use very often, but I try to fit it in every time I can because it makes me feel pretty darn smart. But yeah, it's basically you take two words. It's not like a compound word where you take like, you know, pool room or something like that, and you just put them together. This would be like if you take part of the word and part of another word and you create this sort of new word out of it. Sort of like a celebrity name, like, you know,
Brangelina.
You know, Brangelina, exactly. Thank you. So this is that. My friend, who's my co-host, Nick Cheney, he created the term projectsploitation. He created a website, and he would just post the occasional film blog comments, just little things, you know, sort of irregularly, but, you know, some really great criticism. And so he was talking to me during the beginning of the lockdown in 2020, and we had that conversation that every family had to have in you know, summer of 2020, which was, do you want to start a podcast with me?
Everybody had that conversation.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was a tough conversation, especially with the kids, but we all got through it. But anyway, and I said, oh, what the hell, let's be a cliche and do it. So as it turns out, I enjoyed it. I loved it. And yeah, so projectsploitation is a mix of projector, if you will, and exploitation. Sorry, one second here. I was getting a call from a private number. I don't like to pick up if it's a private number because it seems like they're private, so I don't want to bother them. So
yeah.
Anyway. anyway, so it's a combination of projector, or to project, and exploitation. And exploitation is the theme of our show. And like you said, I'm sure we'll get into it more later.
Yeah. I honestly had never heard you describe it before. So I was always thinking the word project, not projector. So it makes so much more sense now. Projectsploitation. So thank you for that. And yeah, we'll definitely get into that, because of course the word exploitation is in this episode today, and we'll get there. So I have not listened to very many episodes. There's way too many podcasts, I think, all from 2020. There's way too many podcasts to listen to, but I have listened to a handful, and I like you. You know, you guys get into some real deep and meaty stuff about these films. Particularly, I remember the French movie Game Over. It has like 10 different names.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one. Everybody should watch that movie, and then of course listen to your episode about that as well.
Oh, thank you. That was a great episode. Yeah, our episodes, I have to admit, do run usually about 2 hours, and that's after, believe it or not, extensive editing.
Yeah,
I often say that one of the things I really loved about the podcast is it brought together four things I really love, which is film, recording, researching, and talking a lot. So yeah, it ticks a lot of boxes.
There you go. That's the perfect project for you. The perfect projectsploitation. All right. Well, let's see. We got a handful of words before that, including one big one, which is the word explode. E-X-P-L-O-D-E. I think I sent you the list of words, right?
Do you? Yep. Yeah, I'm looking at them right now.
Awesome. Obviously not necessary, but possible. For the people who are watching this on YouTube, all two people probably, the camera is a little bit different today. I've been sitting in my chair for a while and my back was really hurting me, so I decided to stand, and I'm going to be a little bit more mobile today because it's not good to sit in a chair for all these hours. So, you know, I'm just going to be a little bit more active. All right. The first word, as I said, is explode, which is a verb from 1605. We are starting with transitive. Number one, which is archaic, is to drive from the stage by noisy disapproval. To drive from the stage by noisy disapproval. Okay, well, this, all I can think of is somebody, maybe, this would have been in the 1600s, but, you know, back in the 1600s, we had people on stage, we had performers, entertainers, comedians, dancers, whatever you have. And if somebody, I think what this is saying is that if the audience was not happy with what was going on stage, then they would explode them by giving noisy disapproval. Dan, can you give me some good noisy disapproval?
Oh boy, I have one I love, which is I have to say it and then I will explain because it's going to sound. But it's one where it's just somebody in the crowd going dirk 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 dirk. And it's it's from a Saturday Night Live from the late 90s. I think Scott Wolf from Party 5 was host. He's from New Jersey. And of course, SNL's film live in New York. And it was just one of those funny things. I can't find it on YouTube or anything. I don't know if Lorne Michaels just hates me personally or what. He was like, that Dan Jeremy Brooks looking for that. I'm going to thwart him in a big way. But anyway, but it's hysterical. It's just the opening monologue. And he comes out and he's chatting. He's like, you know, I'm from Jersey, blah, blah, blah. And people are like, woo. And then pretty soon you realize there's actually a couple people from the cast in the audience who are pretending to be from Jersey. And they're like, yo, what's up? And he's like, yeah, I'm from Jersey. They're like, we went to high school with you, man. Woo. And he's like, oh, I kind of, you know, he's like, yeah, it's, you know, it's, I don't know. It's Bruiser and Rocky, man. You don't remember us? And he's like, oh, I guess I kind of remember. And they're like, oh, well, maybe you remember Dick. And like Scott Wolf, he essays so many emotions on his face for a second, then he's just like, oh, I definitely don't remember that. And it just goes from there. And for years and years, even to this day, again, my brother and his wife and I would do this all the time. We would be in separate offices in the same, you know, complex, and we just down the hall. And so one of us would be like, so yeah, so that to
it's
me
funny
is,
how
is,
yes, Saturday Night Live just they have so many good quotable things that have just stuck in our brains from when we were that supple age of, you know, teens to early 20s. We all have those for sure. Yeah, Sharon and I like to quote some of those early ones. That one sort of sounds familiar. I don't remember it specifically, but that's great. I'm so glad you had some noisy disapproval. And now
so
I have
approbation.
Been exploded. Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, that's archaic. So, of course, we're not allowed to use it anymore, but I do think we should bring it back. I'm going to explode you off the stage by saying, dick, 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 dick.
I'm telling you, it's very addictive. Nope, no pun intended.
Okay. Number two for explode is to bring into disrepute or discredit, as in explode a theory. Nope, sorry, your theory is wrong. I am going to explode it into pieces because your theory is terrible and I'm discrediting it and I'm disreputing it. I don't know what else. Explode.
Yeah, you'll hear that sometimes. People are like, well, it's exploding stereotypes, or it's exploding racist assumptions, or exploding, you know, old ideas, old, you know, archaic beliefs or whatever.
Yeah, you might hear that. I don't know if I've ever heard it. But now, of course, that you said it, I will probably start to hear it because that's exactly how things go.
Totally.
Number three is to cause to explode or burst noisily, as in explode a bomb. Of course, that's the first thing I think of that explodes. Do you ever watch, or have you ever watched either Mythbusters or the Slow-Mo Guys on YouTube?
I have seen some Mythbusters. I've not seen the Slow-Mo Guys, although you're not, again, not the first person to mention that to me recently. So like you said, that's how it goes. You hear a new word, you hear a new thing, and then suddenly you hear it like two or three more times in that same week or whatever. What are they like?
Well, their whole thing is shooting fast-moving things in very, very high-speed slow motion, with fancy cameras and all that. And they have been doing their YouTube channel for years, and they've just grown and grown and grown. So these guys are huge, and they've even had one of the Mythbusters on their show and lots of other celebrity guests sometimes. But basically, it's just these two guys from Britain, from England somewhere, and one of them lives in Texas now, and they'll just do the craziest, weirdest things just to film in slow motion. And there have been many, many explosions on their show. And of course, Mythbusters is known for all of their explosions.
Naturally.
But maybe I'm jumping ahead because the word explosion is in the next episode. We're talking about just the action of exploding. Well, those were all the transitive ones. Now we got intransitive. Number one, to burst forth with sudden violence or noise from internal energy. To burst forth with sudden violence or noise from internal energy, as we have some subs. Number 1A, to undergo a rapid chemical or nuclear reaction with the production of noise, heat, and violent expansion of gases. As, I mean, you're pretty much describing what an explosion is. There's an example. Dynamite explodes because it's got all those things. What else explodes? Can you think of other things that explode?
This is probably a terrible thing, but I love. I mean, as you know, I watch a lot of films, especially B movies and exploitation films. And one of the great cost-cutting maneuvers used by filmmakers is to often show, like, when an airplane or a helicopter has been shot down, or if it's there's some sort of technical problem, you know, in the case of the helicopter, it's kind of doing the weird spinny thing where it's out of control. And then what it does is it'll go behind some trees or occasionally a mountain, but usually trees, and then you'll explode. And a friend of mine, Smuts, always jokes about that. He's like, man, they are saving so much money. And unfortunately, once in a great while, I will see a real explosion on television in the news. And again, this is the part where I'm kind of like a little ashamed, but I feel like, wow, they saved so much money in that. And I'm like, oh, no, that was real life. Okay, wow. Now that was a shame. Somebody died.
Yeah, not good. Not good. But yeah, so like, so when the helicopter goes behind the trees or the mountain, they just make an explosion happen, and it wasn't the aircraft that exploded, so they didn't destroy it, so they could do a take two.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very, very clever. They get so creative in the film world. Let's see. Dynamite explodes. Yes. Rapid chemical nuclear reaction, noise, heat, and a violent expansion of gases. Sometimes I feel like I'm trying to make a fart joke. I don't know how to. There's violent expansion of gases from my butt. Because this is an adult podcast.
Absolutely.
Yes, of course. We are
bringing
so
a level of highbrow.
Yes. 1B is to burst violently as a result of pressure from within. Oh, come on. How can we not make another fart joke here? Burst violently. So inside, there is lots of pressure. A volcano has lots of pressure inside, and then when the pressure becomes too much, it explodes out forth from the top, probably, and all of the magma and things go everywhere.
Right.
That's how they work. 2A, to give forth a sudden, strong, and noisy outburst of emotion, as in, exploded in anger. Do you ever explode in anger or other emotions?
I do, but not as much as I used to. I've found a trick, actually it's my trick is just sitting right over here. Particularly when I'm driving, I've decided that it's kind of unseemly to yell at other drivers, or especially if you got the window down or you don't want to make, the whole thing is just, it's bad form in general. So, what I've realized is one way that I can avoid not being so angry and exploding so much in anger, as you will, is some years ago, my brother and his wife got me for Christmas this little stuffed prairie dog.
Not taxidermied.
Yes, not a taxi, anyway, actually, he's right here. I don't know if you can see him, but this is Durante the prairie dog. And a lot of times what I do is when I'm driving alone, because when I'm driving with other people, I'm pretty calm. I'm like, okay, I'm not gonna lose my shit around other people. That was just, again, it's unseemly. But when I'm by myself, it's very uncouth. It's uncivilized is what it is. But when I'm by myself, sometimes I get lost in my head and I'm driving and somebody does, and I'm like, and it's just, again, it's a bad habit to get into. And so if I'm alone, sometimes I'll take Durante with me in the car and he'll sort of ride shotgun. And oddly enough, I have found that if I'm driving and Durante the prairie dog is with me, I'm much less likely to lose my proverbial shit around, because I'm like, well, I don't want to embarrass Durante. You know, I'm trying to
reputation, you know, to uphold.
Right, I'm trying to clean it up here to be around this kind of quality, you know.
He raises the bar.
He does. But yeah, it does, weirdly enough, it has a wonderful psychological effect. I'm sure there's some sort of psychological term for it, but I think it's hilarious that it works. And people probably think it's insane because once in a while they'll look in the car and they'll look inside the cabin and they'll be like, you know. But yeah, once in a while I'll be at a drive-through and somebody will be like, is that? And I'm like, it's not a railroad, and I promise you. But yeah, so exploding a lot less than usual.
That's good. Thank you, Durante. Mm-hmm. Is he named after Jimmy Durante?
Oh, for sure. Yes, because of the schnoz. Yeah. I mean, he's not very self-conscious about it.
The side view helps, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. You get a much better idea. But yeah, Jimmy Durante is a major. I love that guy so much. And it just seemed like the perfect fit.
That's awesome. I love doing this because whether or not I know the person, especially if I don't know the person, I get to learn all these fun little tidbits, nuggets about who they are and their life and stuff. So yeah, let's see what else I can learn about Dan today. Mm-hmm. That he sometimes rides shotgun with he sometimes rides with a stuffed prairie dog named Durante in his car. I love mm-hmm. it.
Some people, they're like, God is my co-pilot. I'm like, nope, Durante. Yeah. I guess, and God too. I guess there's enough room for everyone. So yeah.
Why not? God mm-hmm. God can fit anywhere.
Hell yeah.
He's like an octopus in that way.
And he can probably pick any lock in the world like a goddamn octopus can. I just learned that recently.
Yeah.
They're insane.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
They are.
Yeah. Anyway.
Natalia and I had a conversation about octopi when we had the evolution episode. Because those things are crazy. Okay, let's see. We are at 2B, which is to move with sudden speed and force, as in exploded from the starting gate. Of course, we're talking about maybe horses or dogs or humans. Last night, we were just watching... do you ever watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I don't, only because everyone I know loves it. And it's not that I'm being contrarian, but I all of my friends told me pretty early on, they're like, yeah, the characters in it are really, really terrible people. And I thought, well, that's funny. But I was like, oh, I'll get to it eventually. And so whenever I think to turn it on, I'm like, I don't know if I want to deal with that much terribleness today, you know, even though I know it's really funny. So
yeah, yeah. Well, I'd be curious if you start watching it, let us know, because sometimes sure. We've been watching through, like, I think sometimes we just start in a random spot. So we started in like season 9 recently, and we're like now in season 11. Just sometimes if we want something light, we'll put it on light. But the reason I bring it up is because a night or two we turned it on, and it was this episode where they were on a mountain skiing. And near the end, the gates open. There's a race happening, and one of them explodes out of the gate, and the other one, who is not as experienced in skiing, just sort of shuffles his way out very, very slowly. He did not explode out of the ski gate. I thought it was very funny. But yes,
did they
watch
did
that
the two
show?
Of them did the two of them think it was going to be a race, or was one of them under the impression
of
a race?
No,
the other one was like, I'm not going to, you know, disobey.
No, it was definitely a race. It was one who's experienced and one who is not experienced. That was the problem.
Yeah. Love it.
Oh, such a great show. Okay, number 3. This is to increase rapidly, as in the example, the population of the city exploded. You know, I first thing I can think of is back in the 1800s in the West, the population of the West exploded because of the gold rush and all that stuff. Do you have any examples that you can think of a city exploding or something increasing rapidly?
Boy, I'll have to think about
putting
that.
Putting you on the spot.
Oh, no, that's a good question. Yeah, I mean, it's that's certainly a problem around here when it comes to our chipmunk population. Don't get me wrong, they're adorable, but I try to feed a lot of the animals, and chipmunks, God bless them, but they have a very specific evolutionary brief, and that is to grab as much as they can, put it in their cheeks, and then run off, put it somewhere, come back and get more. Now, you'd think this would be more of a squirrel thing, because it's, you know, they squirreled it away, but squirrels are more likely to sit there and eat in front of, you know, they'll be like, you know, and as Eddie Izzard says, they always use two hands. So they're like, you know, really. But chipmunks, they're more like, they're much more the ant than the grasshopper. They're much more the people who are like, I'm going to put this away, and I'll need it later. So the drawback is I'll put out some peanuts or some whatever, And within like 10 minutes, it's gone. So by the time the birds and the squirrels and whoever else comes by, they're like, I see there's an empty dish here. What has happened? And I'm like, the chipmunks.
So, talk to the chipmunks.
Right. I'm like, you know about these guys. You see them every day, you know, and, you know, you need to contact their union or something. I don't know, whatever you need to do. And yeah. So sometimes I will catch a couple chipmunks in a live cage, and then I'll just put them out in a park a couple miles away.
Because you've got too many in your area?
Yeah, and they explode rapidly in growth. I mean, they are very good at breeding.
Hmm. We are still near the end, I think, of this 17-year cicada thing. So, you know, a few weeks ago, a month ago or so, when that was getting going, we definitely had an explosion. The cicada population exploded from the ground, and we, yes. You know, different neighborhoods have a lot, others don't have so much, but we have a lot in our neighborhood. So, walking down the sidewalk was a bit of a problem trying to not step on either shells or dead ones or live ones. So that was
right.
Fun.
Yeesh. Yeah, really. You end up slip sliding away accidentally if you're not careful.
Yeah. Number four for explode is to suggest an explosion as an appearance or effect, as in shrubs exploded with blossoms. Yeah, in the spring, the flowers blossoming, and there's an explosion of pollen in the air. And yeah, just a couple of days ago, we were driving, and there were all these puff balls flying around. So yes, they had exploded from the plants. Exploder is a noun. And real quick, we'll look at the etymology, which says this is from the Latin explodere, which means to drive off the stage by clapping. That's where this word comes from. What?
Huh.
It's from ex plus plaudere, which means to clap. So literally, I just love this old stuff that, and you know, we had the archaic definition there, but, and the etymology confirms it. It's literally, now what's interesting though, is that it's driving off the stage by clapping, and usually we think
right.
of clapping as a good thing. Don't go off stage. Stay here. Please entertain us more. But this, maybe back in the day, clapping was like, go off the stage. We're noisily disapproving of you. Oh, this is fascinating. Ooh. Explodere is driving off the stage by clapping. Fantastic.
Well, I mean, it kind of makes sense because there's a word we use a lot, which I think is French etymology, which is plaudit. So it's like a positive thing. It's like you were given plaudits, you know. So ex plaudit might be the opposite. I don't know, like a negative version of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, ex, yeah, tends to make things opposite or out or something like that. So, yeah, that's an interesting one. I feel like I've heard of people say an explosion of applause, you know, as soon as something's done, so much applause, it's so loud, and it just all of a
right.
sudden rapidly increased. But back in the day, it was, get off the stage!
it's interesting, because you wonder, well, if clapping wasn't the way to show approval, was it just, like, just strong silence? Like,
yeah, what was it? Right.
Mm-hmm.
You were very kind to come to our event a couple of days ago, and luckily I was not exploded off the stage when I was emceeing the event.
Right. No, you were great.
Oh,
and you did, and I did love your start up, your beginning. You're like, huh, hello, word nerds. Nope, it's not this one. I really chuckled at that. I loved it. So.
I'm glad at least a couple of people got that joke.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Me and Heidi were chuckling, definitely.
Nice. Okay, next thing is, can you please make a sound effect with your mouth? Any sound, the first thing that comes to your mind.
Eat.
Eat. Nice. Okay,
eat.
That's what we're going to do. That's going to be the sound effect for this episode. Thank you.
Excellent. Excellent, sure.
Okay, the next word is exploded. Adjective from 1944, showing the parts separated but in correct relationship to each other, as in an exploded view of a carburetor. These are so cool, especially like when they're animated, like in car commercials, or sometimes they'll CGI a car and then you'll see all the different parts. Those are very cool.
Totally.
I think this is interesting that it's from 1944. I wonder if, like, during World War II, did they need to create an exploded version of some piece of equipment, a car, a vehicle, a tank, a plane, I don't know, like, to put things together? I don't know. I'm curious what the history of that is. Why was it 1944?
Great question. I wondered, that was actually the first thing that came to mind for me, too. It was like, well, it's sort of like, you know, you have a diagram, you know, it's like, okay, here's this aircraft, and, you know, we're trying to explain to people how to, you know, put the widgets inside with the rivets, and yeah,
that's,
you can tell,
called,
I know,
yeah,
a ton. Yep, that's the technical term. I mean, it's yeah, not my decision, you know, it's just, that's what they call them. So yeah.
Yeah, if I have time, maybe I'll do a little bit of digging to see why was this 1944? What was the first thing that had an exploded diagram? Cool.
Yeah, I love that.
E! The next word is exploit, and we are emphasizing the first. You know what? Either syllable is fine. Exploit or exploit. First form, noun from circa 1538. This is, the synonyms are deed and act, but especially a notable or heroic act. And then another synonym is the word feat, F-E-A-T, like, oh, that was an amazing feat of physicality when he jumped over the building. A deed or an act, a heroic act. So, yes, I feel like I've heard of maybe Superman and all of his exploits. Is that, right, is that a thing that people have said?
I would say so, yes, yes. Yeah. You'll hear that all the time, I think. Yeah, because he exploits, yes, or I suppose to an extent you could say it. I know for those of us who do a fair amount of gaming and the like, you'd say, oh, this was an exploit, or this is a side exploit, or something like that. Yeah,
yeah, a notable or heroic act. Yeah, and I definitely would want to emphasize the first syllable for this one, exploit. You know, the other way is fine too. This word is from the Middle English, exploit, or a couple other forms of that, which means furtherance or outcome. Interesting. That's kind of it, an outcome. Yeah, so like the thing that you did, the outcome of that heroic act would be the exploit, I guess. Can you please make the sound effect now?
Eek.
The second form of exploit is a transitive verb. Yep, transitive from 1838. And it looks like same pronunciations, but it looks like the more common pronunciation would be exploit, with the second syllable emphasized. So number one is to make productive use of, and the synonym is utilize, as in exploiting your talents. Also, exploit your opponent's weakness. So to make productive use of, I would also say to take advantage of. That would be another way. That's the way I like to think of it. Utilizing your talents. How do you exploit your own talents? What do you do?
Well, as I say, I'm a big fan of recording. I'm a big fan of music, sound,
talking,
talking. God, yes. That's the easiest part. I could just do this all day and day. So I'd say that's a lot of what I do. A lot of actually what I've been doing the last few years has been helping with curation for some film festivals in the area. And it's kind of one of those things where it was something I've always been super obsessed by. Something I always say is get obsessed, stay obsessed, you know, find things that you love and get more into them. I don't mean like get obsessed with like gambling. I don't mean like it's something addictive. I mean something positive where you're creating, you know, something with an imaginative component. And for me, that was a big part of that was always film. In fact, before we started the recording studio, my brother and I very much believed we were going to be filmmakers, writers, directors, kind of in the mold of your Wachowski siblings or your Coen brothers or Hughes brothers or somebody like that. So anyway,
not the Farrelly brothers.
They're fine. They're fine. They're fine. Yeah. I mean, there's something about Mary's a Wonderful Film. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, again, I love fart jokes as much as the next man, but, you know. But,
maybe a little bit higher brow than that.
I guess. I mean, I'm not trying to be all snooty or anything, but yeah, I tend to be a little more, I don't know. I love There's Something About Mary, and I actually love Dumb and Dumber, but I don't know if I've seen a lot of their other films. I mean, I've seen Kingpin, I guess. I don't know, whatever. Yeah.
So film, you know, curating film fests, talking about film, all those things would definitely be exploiting your talents. You definitely are talented in that way. Yeah. And knowledgeable.
Yes. Well, yeah. And that was the thing was for years and years, I just did it and I still do because I love it. And I was telling some friends recently that I said it was only in the last couple of years that it occurred to me that somebody might actually want me to do this as a professional thing, that they would actually, because again, I have all this knowledge that I usually don't bore people with because frankly, it's like, you know, what do you say, you know, to it. But this has been one of those rare instances where I found this thing that at this point in my life, amazingly, suddenly people think they want my expertise. I think that's wonderful and totally unexpected in a great way. So that would be one thing I suppose I do that, which is an exploitation or exploits my talents, I would say.
Yeah. Hey, I mean, obviously you keep on doing it. I know that you just had one film fest curation, and then you're going to have another one later this year. What's that one called again? As you take a sip of a drink.
Oh, sorry. well, the one we just did was called the Mulligan Film Festival, and it was the first annual. I think we are going to be doing a second one because we already have several people submitting. Cool. It's my friend Ramsey Miller and I co-created it, and it's in Aurora, Illinois, which is where I live. Most of the time. And it was just a very small couple hours of films, all short films, mostly local. And we call it the Mulligan Festival because it was for people who we felt like were, we had seen, Ramsey and I had done a fair amount of curating the last few years for other film festivals. And we felt like sometimes we'd have something we really liked, particularly something that was kind of technically daring or unusual. And we felt like, oh, it's a shame this didn't make the grade. It was maybe just a little too outside the parameters of this film festival or whatever, outside the purview of what they wanted. And so we said, you know, about 6 months ago, we said, well, wouldn't it be fun to do a new one where we just do stuff for, you know, whoever, the people we liked that we feel like wasn't seen or was underseen. And so we settled on saying, well, it's like we're giving everybody a mulligan. So it became the Mulligan Film Festival. And that was the one we had
another
a few
shot.
Weeks ago. Another shot, exactly. And then the other one that's coming up is the second annual City of Aurora, City of Lights Film Festival, which was November of last year. So I don't know exactly when it's going to be this year. I'm guessing probably November or October of 2024. But it was that was very good. It was an evening and then a day. So it was a Friday night sort of big premiere, and then three theaters the next day, that Saturday, running concurrently. So, I've just been tapped to be part of it again. So I'm very excited about this year.
Is there a theme?
Not so much for the City of Aurora one. We've talked about it in the past, but it seems like it's more just contemporary work. It doesn't have to be local, although sometimes it is, because that gives us the wonderful opportunity of having people come in and you can actually do, you know, a Q&A with them, which is, I absolutely adore doing Q&As with people. Mm-hmm. And apparently a few of my compatriots do. So they were like, Andrew Carlin, who's the head programmer for City of Lights last year and this year, he said to me last year, he's like, so I'm thinking, would you be interested in doing a couple of Q&As? And I'm like, oh, sure. I love it. I love doing Q&As. And he's like, great. You can do all of them then. Because I don't want to do any more that I have to. Not that he doesn't like the people, but it's just, it's not his forte. And for me, it's like, it's
exploit one of my your talents.
Exactly. It's one of my favorite parts. I love talking to creatives. I love talking to artists. I love asking questions that other people don't ask them. And it's great. I absolutely love it.
That's awesome. Yeah. I know that that was a bit of a tangent, but you know, when it comes to films, I definitely want to talk about that and wanted to learn more. And so, hey, you know, this is airing in June of 2024. You got plenty of time to plan your trip to Aurora in November of 2024 to go see the film fest.
Absolutely.
Okay. And, you know, I think you still got time. You can still be a writer and a director of films. You know, you got a whole lot of time ahead of you. It can still happen.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you. It may happen. I mean, God knows I've seen enough movies that I feel like I've had a kind of an informal education. I mean, I've taken some film classes and stuff over the years. But yeah, my brother Jeffrey keeps saying, you know, we still could do movies. And I'm like, I know the technology is so much more incredible now and so much cheaper. I mean, you can do so much we tried to do a feature film when I was a sophomore and junior in high school. It was about a 2-year project. And of course that was ridiculous. I mean, I should have started with like a short subject, you know, little 3-minute, 5-minute piece, but no, I had to be crazy. And, so yeah, I mean, it's a massive undertaking, but, yeah, you never know. We'll see what happens.
It could have, you just got to write it. That's all. That's step number one, write it. Yeah.
True that.
Number two for exploit is to make use of meanly or unfairly for one's own advantage. So, you know, I said the first one was taken advantage of. This one is definitely a lot more taking advantage of. The example is exploiting migrant farm workers. And yes, that is definitely a place where you would use that word, exploiting them. Oh, so examples of how you would be exploiting them would be, you know, making them work in terrible conditions, not paying them well, knowing the fact that maybe possibly they're immigrants and not legally allowed to be here. You could take advantage and just have them do a whole bunch of stuff, work very long hours. That's for sure exploiting migrant farm workers. Yep, migrant is right there in the word. Exploitability is a noun. Exploitable is an adjective, and exploiter is a noun. Let's see. Did we look at any? We had the etymology in the first one. Okay, now we have to get to E. The next word is exploitation. Yes. Noun from 1803. This is an act or instance of exploiting, as in exploitation of natural resources. And we have two more examples. Exploitation of immigrant laborers. We already talked about that. And clever exploitation of the system. Clever exploitation of the system. So you're using the system in clever ways. I don't know what system is that we're talking about. Whatever it is, you're using it to your advantage. But, of course, we have to talk about exploitation in terms of film. I think that's what we have to have a little bit of a chat about that. So how would you describe exploitation films? What does that mean?
Well, that's a great question, because that's basically what we cover in my podcast with my partner, Nick Cheney. It's something that's sometimes interchangeably called a B movie. And as a period of time, it really flourished between, you might say, the 40s into about 2000 or so. Probably the really sweet spot is like 60 through 2000. And again, it all has to do with inexpensive equipment, which allowed all these smaller studios to create these films. And typically, because they were smaller and because they were working on a shoestring, they tended to create work that was often very, very much originally derisively called exploitation, which meant, well, this is just dwelling on the lurid or the puerile or the something like that, something where there's where you're, what's the word I'm looking for here? Says the guy in the dictionary podcast. Something where there's sort of a you're feeling this sort of enjoyment of something, but it's not something you feel you should be in good company, either due to morals or ethics, but something like that, where there's a, for instance, people talk a lot about pornography as being exploitation of sorts, which it is to an extent, but it all depends. The point of something may be not just to exploit certain feelings or whatever. It could actually be that's just part of what gets you to come to the theater in the first place. So there's stuff where, for instance, legally, the thing about pornography is that the idea is that, okay, well, this work of fiction or whatever, we can call it pornography because it doesn't, it's not, what's the word I'm looking for? It's created primarily to sexually excite or titillate, right? Now, if that happens to be a side product of what its main focus is, then it's not really pornography. So something like James Joyce's Ulysses is a really famous example. There was a big court case, and I want to say 1922, and you know, or the case of Howl by Allen Ginsberg, or Naked Lunch by William S. Burroughs, where yes, the work had a great deal of explicit content in it, stuff that would not maybe be words or settings that would be considered something you talk about in polite conversation, but it wasn't explicitly, so to speak, meant to sexually excite or to whatever, titillate you. So that's kind of what I mean, that's a really long way to say it, but basically exploitation cinema was this idea of, okay, we're operating on a very low budget, so we have to find ways to get people into the seats. So let's make sure we have, you know, this many scenes of violence, this much sex, or this much, maybe what we would call transgressive behavior, or things that were considered scandalous at the time. And of course that changes over time, something like that. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say, Spencer?
Yeah, I was just trying to think of, like, so it's like, what is being exploited? And of course, it depends on the situation. So they're exploiting, they're taking advantage of one of or many of those things to get butts in seats, basically.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, one of the interesting things that Nick and I realized early on was that a great many of these films have a lot of artistry and contemporary social relevance, and it's because of the fact that they were created under such limited budgetary circumstances that there was a lot of what we sometimes call benign neglect. You would have a filmmaker, because the idea was not just the idea for them to be profitable is you had to make a lot, and so certain companies would be like, they would specialize in certain, like like it was a Japanese studio would be like, okay, we're only doing this kind of juvenile picture, juvenile delinquent picture, and this kind of Yakuza picture, and we're going to do this many a year. So, you know, you would have just an incredible array of talent and filmmakers who are churning out, you know, 4, 5, 6 a year, sometimes more, as directors or as actors and writers, etc. So, but the thing was, is because so many were going through the door so fast, as long as you ticked certain boxes, like, you know, okay, you gotta have this, this, and this, you often were not given much oversight, because who can keep track of all the stuff you're putting out? You can't go to the set every day and make sure the director is doing things right. You know, you just go, you look, you know, you release the movie, you're like, oh, this is good to business. Okay, we're gonna keep you on for another couple films. And so what often happened was these guys would create something like a great example of this is I think it's 52 or 53. Fritz Lang, who's one of the great cinema artists, he fled Nazi Germany. He literally had a meeting with Joseph Goebbels, and who was like, we really liked Metropolis, we really liked M. We'd really like to have you come work for us. And he's like, huh, interesting. Well, let me think about it. And he literally ran home, packed, and fled. And it was like one of those things where they should make it into a movie, because apparently it was a harrowing escape. He had to hide in a in one of those rail car berths, you know where you go to sleep at night back when you'd spend, and he had to hide in there and all this other stuff. Came to America, had to start over, and he did a ton of great films, but a lot of them were in what was called film noir, which is one of the great exploitation or B-movie genres, even though at the time there was no word for it. It wasn't a genre. It was just a crime movie or a, you know, juvenile delinquent movie or a, you know, policer or something like that. And so Fritz Lang comes to the U.S., and he was churning these out. And so at the time, and I know this is really long-winded here, but it's basically Columbia Pictures at the time was very famous for a lot of B movies. They were not quite as highfalutin as we think of them now. And so in the 40s and 50s, they had contracted Fritz Lang. So they said to him, okay, there's this novel that was serialized in a magazine. It's called The Big Heat. We bought it in like December of 52. I think it was 52. It came out in December of 52. We bought it in January. The writer has already written the script. It's now February. We have to have, here are the dates we're going to be shooting it. You have to have this much violence. You have this much sex, what they called sex at the time. And by the way, we already have the release date because we already made the poster. So, you know, this guy's going to star in it too. So there was very little room for that. But within those confines, people would make incredible work. Because at the same time as Columbia was making that, they were in the middle of this huge Cadillac production for this movie called From Here to Eternity, which was this big book by James Jones. It was a huge, massive, it's a thick book, but it was a huge popular sensation. They bought it. They're like, this is going to be our ticket to the Oscars. We are going to pull out all the stops. We are going to, you know, and they spent like, I feel like it was almost 2 years of pre-production, production, post-production. They got, you know, Sinatra, they got Burt Lancaster, they got all these people involved. They did all this shooting on big sets, which at the time was much considered a much more impressive thing to do than to shoot outside. Shooting on a set was considered better because you could control the environment, while something like The Big Heat, which was made at the same time, was shot largely outdoors or in real life places because that was kind of lowbrow trash. That was like, yeah, whatever, you know. And so now From Here to Eternity did go on to become this enormously successful film. It won a slew of Oscars, and it's still very well regarded today. It's a very good film. But The Big Heat, which Columbia didn't really pay much attention to because they were so preoccupied with getting this big Burt Lancaster vehicle done, that they didn't really pay that much attention, like I said. And so Fritz Lang created this incredibly stylish, tough-minded, very unusual film with I think one of the first real honest to God almost anti-heroes. I mean, he's not quite an anti-hero, but he's close to the edge. And he was able to do this stuff, the lighting, the editing, everything about it was so amazing that that's now considered an enormous classic in its own right. While at the time, like I said, it was considered, whatever, you know, just trash, you know, a genre quickie, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so those movies like that, would often, because of that, would have these incredible stylistic choices because nobody was paying attention, or the director would just get bored. You know, you're doing like 5-6 movies a year, and after a while, you're like, "All right, well, maybe I'll shoot this scene without any setups. It'll just be like close-ups, or maybe I'll shoot it and the lighting will be really weird here, where like you can't see anything in the background, just the face, you know, whatever." And so out of this came these incredible, almost avant-garde or experimental touches that you would have never gotten away with during the old studio system because you had a million people watching. You had all these bean counters. You had all these guys going, "Oh, no, you're straying from the formula slightly. No, you don't." But because these guys were left, as I say, in sort of benign neglect, they were kind of allowed to do a lot of what they wanted so long as they ticked those boxes. You got to have this much, you know, this much of a car chase has got to be here or whatever. And so you'd have that. And then you had people who, because they were made quickly, you'd have a film where, you could actually make a film and to put it out within like maybe 3 or 4 months of like a major political event or a major social event. So say you wanted to do a film about, or you wanted to touch on something like, I don't know, the Suez Canal crisis or Cuban Missile Crisis or one of those crises, you know, you could do a film that sort of alluded to it even a few months later. While these big ones, these big movies, I mean, it would take sometimes years to get these things. They were very slow moving. And again, they were much less likely to take a chance and have a very progressive or very unusual political viewpoint to them because they wanted to get as many, you know, as you say, butts in the seat.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, they've got those limitations and there's that phrase of like limitation pushes creativity or something like that. And, you know, these
hugely.
Films seem to tend to go on to be like more of the cult classics or the ones that really stand the test of time because they were pushing those limits. This one specifically, I don't remember if I've ever seen it. I mean, I've definitely heard of it, but I don't know if I've ever seen that one. So I got to put that on the list. I looked it up. The tagline for this one is Vice, Dice, and Corruption.
Ooh, so that's great. Good. It's true. There is a ton about corrupt policemen, which is pretty scandalous for the time. I mean, they're good cops too, but I mean, you know. Yeah, I think my favorite tagline, it's for Killer's Kiss from like the late 50s, but it's like her kiss was the sin-smeared, trip into the hell of, you know, hole of hell, or, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just so like, ooh, it's like poetry, you know?
Yeah.
It's the poetry of noir.
Ooh, that one's Stanley. I will see if the tagline. Ooh, exposed the mobs, malls, and mayhem of New York City's clip joint jungle. that's at least
good.
One of the taglines. There could be more.
Oh, that's good.
Oh,
though.
Yeah, here. Her soft mouth was the road to sin-smeared violence.
That's it.
Wow.
So good. I know.
That's crazy.
These guys, man, and it's like these guys that are all like uncredited. We have no idea who specifically wrote what. Because these guys back then, they were just hack writers. You know, they're the guys who designed the posters. A lot of times, we don't know who did design the posters. It's crazy. But they did incredible work. And they were working so fast. They were really in their zone, you know?
That's so cool. From your podcast, are there like a few, not necessarily like episodes that you want to call out, but like films that you talked about that like maybe are a few standout exploitation films that you just want to like quickly mention?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that's really fun about exploitation is it's not any one genre. It's very elastic and it doesn't have to be part of a style or a movement or even an era. And so for us, it was exciting because we were like, we can literally do, you know, dozens, or we could probably do, you know, over 50
hundreds.
Or 60 episodes. Oh yeah. I mean, but before we even would get to a point where we're like, oh, we're doing another Western, you know, it's like there were so many subgenres. I mean, you've got, which is Aussies with guns, basically. You've got nunsploitation, which is, believe it or not, a subgenre. You've got hagsploitation, which is not the nicest term in the world, but that was sort of the thing that kind of came out of whatever happened to Baby Jane, that kind of thing, where you'd have older women who were very treacherous or whatever. Obviously, there's blaxploitation, which was this enormous flowering of talent and creativity in a very short amount of time. I mean, you know, all these African Americans were being employed both behind the camera and in front of the camera. They were writing, they were directing. So there was a lot of that. So that was kind of the thing is we thought this is like an endless array of exciting films. And it's in each time we do an episode, it could be something vastly different than the last one. I'd say some of the big ones we talked about, our first episode's Death Race 2000, which was produced by the late Roger Corman, who just died a few weeks ago. And that is an absolutely brilliant example of a movie where it takes something that's doesn't sound like a very promising subject for a movie, where it's like in the future, elite celebrity sportsmen drive around in cars and hit people for, run over people for points. And you're like, okay, yeah, that sounds pretty exploitive. I mean, that does sound like we're just watching people get killed for no reason. That's pretty disgusting. But it actually has so much to do with media and sports as violence in sports and dystopia and the distraction of violence on TV as a way to keep us from rising up against a dystopian landscape. So, and it's also hilarious. I mean, there's some scenes that are so funny and it's very dark humor. So Death Race 2000 is a great example of that. I think that's David Carradine, I want to say.
David Carradine, Sylvester Stallone is in it. Yeah, that sounds fun.
Early Sylvester Stallone.
75.
Yes, yes. Another one we did was Vampiros Lesbos, which is very much what you would think the title yeah, which leads you to believe. But it's you know, it's funny. We are so used to the idea of vampires and lesbians and that sort of thing is all being sort of wrapped together. But this was a early entry by this director, Jess Franco. This guy was, speaking of prolific, he would do several movies a year. He just was able to kind of capture the zeitgeist sometimes. And this was one of those where it's filmed in, I believe, Spain, Mallorca, maybe. I can't quite remember. But he would find a really exotic locale and he would hire some, you know, absolutely beautiful people to be in his films. And out of it came this film, which, again, it doesn't sound like it has the most promising storyline, but it's absolutely wonderful and artistically exciting. But and it's also, you know, it is very titillating. I mean, there's definitely, you know, if you're a heterosexual man or a gay woman, you're gonna be like, oof, yowza, you know. So you're gonna be like, I need to dab my forehead here, you know, that kind of
thing. That's the thing that's being exploited is, you know, attractive, sexy people. That's going to put butts in the seats. That was Istanbul, Turkey. That's where they filmed that one.
Okay, got it.
1971. Yeah.
Yeah, right. A very early entry into the kind of lesbian vampire thing. Much, much earlier than, say, The Hunger by Tony Scott or whoever. I would say another one that's a really great example is Tokyo Drifter, which is a Japanese film from, I believe, 67. That's Seijin Suzuki. And I'm not going to go into it because it would take forever. But you know, you listen to the episode, you know. But the story of his creation of it is so brilliant because it was, again, one of those examples where he was cranking out five, sometimes six movies a year. And they were all in the Yakuza genre, what they called the borderless action cinema, which meant it wasn't any particular time or place. It was like a weird amalgamation of like five different decades, but it wasn't over any one decade. You know, sort of like if you watch the show Archer, you're like, well, what time period are we in here? You know, I love that, you know. And Suzuki had gotten to a point where he was just, he literally said, he and the other directors were making films where the scripts were so similar. He was actually legitimately concerned he was going to make a movie that was almost exactly like somebody else's there. And they weren't going to know till they got done. So he would go to the other sets all the time and he'd be like, oh, how are they filming the love scene in this? Okay, I'm going to film it totally different. I'll have to remember that, you know. And again, he got bored and he started doing crazy stuff. And the studio was not having it. They were like, yeah. You're making weird movies. We don't want weird movies. We want movies that put butts in the seat. So they would start like punishing him by giving him like less of a budget. Or they'd be like, okay, well, you can shoot this, but you only have this amount of time now. And he'd be like, fine. You're going to do that to me? Okay, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to shoot this scene, you know, this whole sequence, and I'm not going to have any establishing shots. How about that? You know, or I'm going to edit this in a totally weird way that makes me happy because I'm not bored, but you're going to be really pissed off. And I'm going to throw a musical number in the middle of this Yakuza film. And it's a catchy song called Tokyo Drifter. Oh, and I'm going to have a saloon brawl that's straight out of a Western in this movie, too. And they're like, okay, buddy, listen, we've warned you already a couple times. Now we're going to really punish you. You have to do this next movie in black and white. And so he did a movie after that called Branded to Kill, which is the one of the weirdest movies ever made. And they fired him. And then there was a whole to do. You'll have to listen to the episode. But anyway, the film before Branded to Kill, Tokyo Drifter, the one with the sound, the music and the saloon brawl. It's just an absolutely gorgeous, brilliant movie. The colors, the sets, the lack of sense that the story makes, it's incredible. There's a scene near the beginning which he shot in black and white, and he actually took expired film stock and they degraded it before they filmed it so as to make it look, it was almost like a parody of all the Yakuza films that were being made by his studio and other studios at the time. So it's like, and that's just like, again, that's like the first 4 or 5 minutes. So it's Tokyo Drifter by Seijin Suzuki is absolutely wonderful. So I would say that's a must see as far as the Yakuza genre goes.
Yeah. Those are some three really good examples of not only films to watch, but also that most people probably haven't seen or even heard of. And also like, then you got to go check out your episodes on those. Yeah. It's fun. Like they cover the range of genres, like you said. So yeah, there's like there's no lack of exploitation films.
There really isn't.
Do you have more episodes coming up? Or I know that you don't have like a regular schedule necessarily.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I honestly, I'm in awe of the way that you're able to be so disciplined and so put together and how you schedule all this. I mean, for the dictionary, I'm just for me, it's like I'll have some downtime. So Nick and I will be like, well, let's record some episodes because we have no, like you said, there's no lack of ideas for episodes. We're constantly like, we already know what our next probably 20 or so episodes are going to be.
Wow.
But, you know, it's one of those things where you'll be going and then you're like, I'll get busy with, like I said, this film festival stuff or some work I do for the Aurora Film Society or something like that. And then I also help mix a couple other people's podcasts. And so, you know, sometimes you're like, OK, I got to put my stuff on the, you know, because my projectploitation for us is our fun thing. And it's not for money. We don't have sponsors. We really don't even care how many people listen, as long as a couple people do, you know what I mean? It's really just something we do for ourselves. I joke that a lot of it is just me trying to crack up my friend Nick, you know, half the time, because he's like super deadpan and I'm super not. So a couple times, usually once or while, every episode, I get a couple good ones in where he'll lose it a little for a second, though he'll probably deny it later. So when we do episodes, I mean, we haven't actually put out a new episode, and I think it's been over a year and a half now.
Oh, my God.
Which is shocking because it feels like I just, you know, but again, I got busy with this other stuff. But yeah, we do have a ton coming up. We've got, I believe, we've recorded something like 10, and I've mixed most of them. And so there's a couple things that need to be done on them. And actually, I'm recording some reels for Instagram, which are just basically little skits. And it's just me and Nick and actually Durante the Prairie Dog is in them, too. So, yeah. So you'll get to hear him speak in it as
well.
So, yeah, we do have a lot coming out. But, yeah.
Yeah. You know, 10 recorded and, you know, 20 planned out. That's that'll keep you busy for a while. So yeah, lots of stuff to check out there. A very niche film subject podcast. I love it, and I want to watch all of them and listen to all your episodes when I have time.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Did we cover exploitation? I think maybe we did.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I don't think there's. I mean, one thing I guess you could say about the word exploitation, which is interesting, is that. It's a lot like so many words, like where it's what's the word I'm looking for? Sometimes it's called semantic drift, but in this case, it's not a drift. It's like a lurching towards a different meaning. For instance, I still feel uncomfortable using the word, but you hear people using the word queer cinema, because when I was growing up, that was definitely not a nice thing to say to somebody. But because it's been reclaimed and rebranded by them. By the LGBTQ community, it's become this word like, well, you can't insult us with this anymore because we've taken it back. And I think exploitation, not just the original despairing use of it, but also just the fact that so many of these films that we used to consider works that were incredibly misogynistic or sexist or racist or ableist or just mean-spirited. Some of them, as it turns out, there's a lot of subtext to them, and a whole generation of critics starting in the 70s, but especially now, there's been a real flowering of fascinating content, both online and in various film magazines, which I would really recommend to people. Check out Cineast magazine, Little White Lies, which is a British magazine. It's kind of hard to find, but it's beautiful and brilliant. You know, that sort of thing. My point is that I found that the word exploitation is typically a negative, like you said, to exploit migrant workers because they don't have recourse to the law or whatever. But in this case, I've found, and it's been kind of exciting to see people, especially people of color and women, kind of changing the meaning, the idea of sometimes what you'll hear is Clover, I can't think of her first name. She's a great film critic. She created the term the final girl and that sort of idea in horror. and kind of reclaiming that meaning from, oh, you know, sex equals death and virgins are the only ones allowed to survive. The meanings have become more manifold. There's so many more ideas now. There's a great quote from Mariana Colleen I just ran across recently, where she says the purpose of horror serves as entertainment, but horror at its core is thematically about anxiety. You watch your most absurd fears manifested on screen and you feel better because since someone else made this thing, that means they have demons too. And so maybe you're not as alone as you thought you were.
Yeah, that's just like one tiny little aspect of that whole world. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Carol Clover was the one who turned Final Girl. Yeah, and yeah, you know, when you bring up the word queer, I agree. It's, you know, we are of a similar age, and I remember that Simpsons episode that had John Waters on it, and he said queer, and Homer's like, and that's the other thing. You took that word. That's our word for you. But you took
it
and turned it around. Yeah. Oh, Homer.
I love it.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, that was the beginning of that evolution. And yeah, so it's what this word that used to mean one thing has now been changed and embraced by either a community or a society or whatever it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so much good stuff about exploitation. I got a lot of homework to do. I got a lot of movies to watch.
Only if you want to.
I want to. I for sure want to. Yes.
Just for fun, though.
And then I will, for some of them, I will maybe record myself talking about them as I watch them and put them up on YouTube.
I would love that. As I said, I really enjoyed your Roadhouse, kind of your test pilot episode. I really enjoyed that. And in fact, when I had the great opportunity the other day to speak to one of the actors in it, who's the immortal John Doe from the band X, great songwriter, great singer and lyricist, I mentioned Roadhouse to him kind of as a joke. And he's like, well, he's like, yeah. And then he's like, okay, it is sort of the greatest B movie ever made. And I'm like, in a lot of ways it is. It's a very high budget B movie.
Yeah, it's kind of an amazing B movie. That's absolutely a good way to describe it. Yeah, I didn't know what to expect when I watched it for the first time. And I was like, yeah, I get why people love this movie.
Yeah, it's so watchable. I mean, I know that sounds like a goofy thing to say, but I have to admit, I hadn't seen it in years. And I'm like, yeah, I'm really having a good time here. Of course, your commentary added a ton, I have to say. I mean, I definitely enjoyed it more now than before. I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Through adult eyes or different eyes, yeah. Well, thank you for saying that. We now are going to go to our next word. I feel like maybe in the video I'm going to put up like lots of film talk for this many minutes. If you're here for the dictionary, either skip ahead or whatever. Well,
yes.
Whatever.
Oh,
it's
absolutely fun
for me. Yeah. I think it's your turn to make the sound effect.
Oh, eat.
The next word is exploitative. Exploitative. Adjective from 1885. Exploiting or tending to exploit, especially unfairly or cynically using another person or group for profit or advantage. As in, exploitative terms of employment, also as in, an exploitative film, and those are all the examples. Exploitatively is an adverb. So yeah, it's the adjective, exploitative. Yeah, you're describing a thing as using exploitation, basically. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Just really fast, I love these... the years, how they're able to pinpoint the year that a word goes into being, because you have like exploitation 1803 and then exploit 1838. And then all the way in 1885, you finally get to exploitative. I just thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. It's a lot of years later. And it's like, what happened? What did they not have it? What? Yeah. I don't know. It is interesting to look at the years for sure. The next word is exploitive. Now, the previous one was exploitative. This one is just exploitive. This is an adjective from 1921, and the synonym is just exploitative. So for some reason, 35 years later, they thought that maybe they could shorten it to just exploitive, but I don't know if it caught on. I think exploitative might have kept the rein there between the two. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Sound effect time.
Eep.
The next word is exploration. Noun from 1537. This is the act or an instance of exploring. And explorational is an adjective. Exploration. I mean, I feel like there's a lot to say about that, but, you know, we got a couple more explore words. Exploration, going on an exploration, similar to, what was the episode that aired this morning that I listened to? Expedition. I think that was what, yeah, it's sort of a similar idea. But let's just move on to explorative. Explorative. Adjective from 1738. The synonym is exploratory, which is actually our next word, and exploratively, that's an adverb. So, sound effect.
Eep.
We're just chugging through some of these because, you know, there's not a lot to say about them. The next word is exploratory. I feel like the first thing I think of with this word is exploratory surgery, maybe?
Absolutely. First thing came to mind.
Okay. I'm not alone. Adjective from 1620. This is of, relating to, or being exploration. As in, it's right there. Exploratory surgery. I literally didn't even see that word. Exploratory
Perfect.
Surgery. Also is in exploratory drilling for oil. So they are going to explore. They're going to explore. Like, what's exploratory surgery? That's when you get cut open and they're like, let's just look inside. Let's see what's going on in there. We don't know what's in there, but we gotta cut you open to find out. Is that what it is?
I think so, yeah. And honestly, there's a little chill went down my spine when I saw it was from 1620. I'm like, I feel like they were doing a lot more exploratory surgery back then. It was just like, you know, we're going to cut you open. We're just going to look. We're going to have a little fun with the spleen. We're just going to see what happens, you know? So
We got to learn. You know, 400 years ago, there was a lot of education that had to happen.
Yes, exactly.
All right, one more word.
Yeah, go ahead.
What were you going to say?
Oh, nothing. It's just our mutual friend, Greg Simpson. He has this might be a podcast. He has a band called Doppelopolis, and they do have a song about a real...
Doppelopolis.
Doppelopolis. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. Not Doppelopolis. Yes, yes. I always confuse that. But yes, it's the Bizarro World metropolis, if you will. And he does have a song, which I had no idea, but apparently it's a legit thing. There was this historical figure who was, I wish I could remember more of the details right now. You'll have to look it up. But this guy was doing all these things where he was, he convinced some volunteer that he knew that he allowed him to cut him open and he would put things inside of him like vegetables and various things. And then he wouldn't let the wound heal. And then it was terrible. So then the guy basically realized this was a bad deal for him and he escaped, which makes me think he was not being, it feels like some duress was involved.
Yeah.
And then the guy convinced him to come back. Oh, it's a horrifying story, but the song's very catchy. That's the important part.
Yeah, that's the important part. I'll have to message him to ask him what that song, who is that person? Interesting. Now I'm so curious. Okay. Well, we're going to go to our last word. It's the word explore. Explore. We started with explode and we are ending with explore. Just one letter is different. This is a verb from 1585 and we are starting with transitive. Number 1A, to investigate, study, or analyze, and also look into. Just gonna look into. I'm going to explore into your eyes. as in the example, which is a quote. Oh, there's additional information. Okay, the first example is explore the relationship between social class and learning ability. So that's an interesting thing to study. If you are maybe a higher social class, you can learn better or learn more. I don't know. But this says this is sometimes used with indirect questions, as in the example, which is a quote, to explore Where Ethical Issues Arise. That is from R.T. Blackburn. To explore where ethical issues arise. Well, there is no question, but I guess it's an indirect question. Where do ethical issues arise? I don't know. Let's go exploring.
Interesting. You know, it's funny. I just learned recently about the idea that the idea of willpower, stamina, the ability to discipline and put pleasure aside for a bit or whatever, that sort of thing. Apparently, there have been some studies in the last few years, and I learned this on Rebecca Watson's YouTube podcast. So she's a skeptic, I think is what she's known as. So she's wonderful. But she had a thing just the other day where she was talking about willpower and the idea of like, well, do we only have so much of a cache of willpower every day that we can build from? So like, say you're, you know, your roommate gets into the bathroom before you at the start of the day. So you're frustrated, but you don't yell at them or whatever. And then you're in the car and somebody cuts you off and, you know, as I say, roll down the window, because in my case, I have Durante with me, but, you know, other people, maybe not. Then you get to work and your boss is incompetent and you don't yell at your boss. And then all this. So finally, when you get home and you're ready to maybe sit down and read an improving book, as they say on Jeeves and Wooster, and you know, and then you kind of go, you know, man, I am just all out of discipline and energy. I just need to sit down and watch, I don't know, you know.
It's Always Sunny.
It's Always Sunny. Sure. Perfect. Yeah. Whatever the comfort food is. And apparently that has to do in part to glucose levels in our blood. Apparently when we show willpower or we defer pleasure or discipline ourselves, it does often take a certain... It depletes a certain amount of glucose, I believe is the word. I hope I'm not getting this wrong, but please check out Rebecca Watson's episode. It was just on YouTube a few days ago. But basically, the idea is that it's... anyway, the idea behind all this is a really long-winded way to say it. People who are in more at-risk areas, people who are in places with higher levels of crime or higher levels of injustice or unsustainability... or just people who are stressed more because of the environment, or are living paycheck to paycheck. So people in a lower social stratum or lower class tend to be using more of their, you know, discipline, if you will, events arise more often where they have to do that and have to use it. And so it's very difficult to say, learn something at the same time when you're also balancing against that. And I thought that was interesting. Or so that can affect people's learning ability. They can affect people's ability to just simply sit down at night and read the newspaper or watch the news, because it's like, you know, people who work two jobs or three jobs, you know, when people are like, well, I don't know what's going on in politics, I'm like, I don't blame you, man. You're working a lot. And at the end of the night, sometimes you just don't have any more energy. You don't have any more disciplined cash, if you will, stored up to just say, okay, now I'm going to learn about the issues with these guys who are running for president or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It makes sense. I mean, yeah, if you're dealing with things if you're dealing with problematic issues much more frequently in your life than other people, then that's going to have a huge effect on the rest of your life, in your relationships, in your job, and whatever it is. So, you know.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's a... we could explore that for a while, but we don't have time.
No.
1B... is to become familiar with by testing or experimenting, as in test new cuisines. At first, I thought that said test new cushions. Well, yeah, I would like to be a cushion tester.
Ooh, sit that sounds
my
like a
butt
great
down
job.
On those cushions. Yeah, right?
It's good work when you can get it, man.
Yeah, Goldilocks was a cushion tester. Sorry.
Yes.
Explore new cuisines. Yeah. Ooh. I think there's a lot of people out there who are not interested in exploring new cuisines. They just want to stick to the cuisine that they know. But I think it's good, not just cuisines, but, you know, other countries and cultures. I think you gotta break out of your little bubble and go, you know, see what else is out there, I think.
Oh, for sure.
Number two is to travel over for adventure or discovery, and the thing that you might be traveling over is new territory. Now, that makes me think you're going over the new territory, but I think you're just going to the new territory. To travel over new territory for adventure or discovery. Yeah, similar of what I just said. It's so good to go to a new place. I have a potential work trip at the end of the year that would be in a new city, a new country that I've never been to. So I'm very excited. It's not set in stone, so I don't want to say anything. But I am very excited to go explore a new city.
And you said you might be heading you are heading to Spain this coming weekend?
Yes, in work. Just a few days. I'm going to Madrid for a week for work. You know, it's not pleasure, so there won't be much time to explore. There will be mostly time of working and sleeping. I actually was in Madrid, I think last year, and I had a whole day to just explore. So I just like walked around all over the place and had to like stop periodically to charge my phone and eat some food and get a drink or whatever. But
nice.
Yeah. So I'll have a little bit of time to explore. Looking forward to it.
That sounds great. Well, as T.S. Eliot says, we shall never cease exploring, and in the end, where we will come to, what does he say? We will arrive at the place we started and know it now for the first time. What we call the beginning is often the end, and what is it to make? The end is often where we start from, and every phrase and every sentence is is both the beginning and I don't know, something like that. Anyway, yeah.
So all about yeah, it's, you know,
it's from Four Quartets. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
cool. Yeah. Is there a place that you want to explore or something that you like to explore specifically?
Space. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm sure that would be fun too, but no, I think, you know, I've actually never been outside the country and, there's a couple places I definitely would like to go. I would love to go to Buenos Aires, just because a lot of this has to do with the fact that I read a great deal of fiction, from a couple different places specifically I read a lot from writers from Argentina, and so I was kind of like, oh, that looks interesting, I'd like to do that. I'd love to go to Venice. I think that would be beautiful because from what I've heard they do not allow cars because it's mostly water.
Yeah.
And so because of that there's so little noise pollution that they say it's like you could be like, you know, you could be in the middle of the night, you could be walking somewhere and you could hear somebody approaching from like a really great distance away.
Wow.
Because I know. And I'm like, sign me up. I'm so into this.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I would love to explore Venice. Number three is to examine, especially for diagnostic purposes, as in explore the wound. Let's go digging in the wound to see what's wrong with it.
Yes.
And then last definition is intransitive, which is to make or conduct a systematic search, as in explore for oil. And then there was another drilling, exploratory drilling for oil. That's what it was. Yeah. Got to go find that oil. We can't survive without oil. Let's go deplete Earth's resources. Yeah.
Yes. And of course, I mean, one of the most important explorations, and I say this not just because I used to run a recording studio, but just because it's such an important resource for all of us, is that you have to explore the space when you have a timbre, you know, when you have the cowbell. You have to really explore the entire studio space with the cowbell and in order to find that perfect sweet spot. So that's a you know, strategic reserve of that we need to tap into often, I think.
Yeah. See how the cowbell sounds over here. See how it sounds over here. It's going to be different everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Explore the acoustics of the space.
Yes.
Well, we have reached the end, which means that you now have to pick a word of the episode. So I will tell you the words again. We had explode, exploded, exploitation, exploitative, exploration, explorative, exploratory, and explore.
I have to pick one?
You must. You are required.
It's a moral, imperative. I hate to be a really predictable guy here, but I'm going to go with exploitation because I feel like the meaning, like we have already discussed, is so myriad and so interesting. And I always love the idea of semantic drift where people can take something that was negative and make it a positive. I think that's just such an exciting part of language, particularly the English language.
Yeah, yeah. Off the top of your head, would you like to sing an extremely short song about exploitation? My song would be Exploitation can be interesting, especially in film.
I thought you terrible. Meant like, no, that was actually pretty nice. No, I thought you were going to, I thought you meant like a song that exists, like, you know.
No. Like, just something sing it.
Let's see. Exploitation. Though some would call it bad, it's not always bad if you do it the right way. As says Durante. That's some right, kids. Kids. Very unnecessary. No, anyway.
There you go.
Sorry. Yes.
The kids don't know Jimmy Durante.
But he's ripe for rediscovery.
Yeah. I would be curious to see what he had back in the day.
Originally though, I thought you wanted me to like literally sing you like a Union song, like, you know, the Diggers song, or like, I don't know, Allentown by Billy Joel. I sing that all the time too. So yeah.
Oh, maybe a 16 tons would be an exploitation song. You load 16
so true.
Tons. What do you get?
What do you get?
For sure.
That's
They were definitely exploited. Yeah, that's the word.
Right. Well, the guy had just been born and he's already, you know, having to load all that number 9 coal. It's like, geez, he didn't even get a chance to like wake up and, you know, get accustomed to his surroundings, you know? So.
Right. Just send him to the coal mine. Thank you for doing this, having some fun with this odd format. Just real quick, you know, give us all your plugs in addition to the podcast. Anything else you want to plug?
Sure. Well, I mean, obviously, there's a podcast that's at projectsploitation.com. And that is where, as I say, my cinematic brother, Nick Cheney, and I dive into the relevance and resonance of exploitation in B-movie cinema, and where we dip into the very rich well of celluloid schadenfreude, as my friend Nick says. So, yes, that's the tagline for his website as well. So that's it. Projectsploitation.com. It's spelled just like it sounds, people. So,
yeah, I was going to say it's P-R-O-J and then exploitation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Correct. Yep. Mm-hmm. So there's that. I would say also check out a podcast that I've been mixing for a few years. I'm a co-producer on it, but it's really my friend Brandon Kane's show. It's called The Diabolical Tales Radio Hour. And it is one of the cleverest things you will ever hear, I think. It's Brandon, I've known him for many years. I've done sound design for him. We've written songs for his films. And he's been doing this thing, which is incredible. It's a throwback sort of radio show, like from the 40s and 50s. And I know there are a fair amount of radio shows on that are podcasts, like, you know, a lot of Spotify stuff. But this one really goes all in. I mean, it is very, I mean, it's got an announcer. It's got a star plug at the beginning. Brandon actually writes commercials for them. So each one has at least two era specific commercials. So like, buy yourself a bomb shelter today, you know, or whatever, or these here, you know, not Chesterfields, but like, you know, these cigarettes are good for you because of the cool mountain flavor, you know, or whatever. And and our friend Troy Sterling Neese, who's a brilliant composer. He just finished premiering the new version of Caligula, which he rescored from beginning to end. Apparently the movie is actually not too bad now because of the re-editing. But anyway, our friend Troy, who we've known for many years, he scores each episode. Each episode's about 20, 22 minutes, and it's absolutely a blast. It's funny, it's clever, and it's also got a lot of heart, but there's a lot of like goofiness as well and a lot of homages. And my friend Brandon, it's all set in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and so he's an incredible researcher. He'll, you know, we'll be talking about an episode and he's like, oh yeah, on that day in Washington, there was actually a really bad thunderstorm right next to the Washington Monument. And that's why I added that. I'm like, holy cow. So like half the characters in there, I think they're fictional. And he's like, no, that was a real scientist. That was a real guy. Or this was a real FBI agent. I'm like, he's created this amazing world that I absolutely love. So it's called The Diabolical Tales Radio Hour. I have the good fortune to be a co-producer and to mix the episodes, and it's an absolute blast. Everyone has to check it out.
That sounds fun.
It's so fun. And again, it's not a big tax on your time. It's about 20 some minutes. You know, he usually releases about four episodes. You know, it's like a four episode plot arc, usually four to six episode plot arc. It's great. And and also, as I say, I've got the City of Lights Film Festival coming up. And also, I am president, don't you know, of the Aurora Film Society. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And let me tell you, I rule with an iron fist.
No, I bet you do.
No, but it's a subscriber-based thing that we do. It's in which we show 12 movies a year, and just like a magazine. So you subscribe for the full year, and then every third Thursday, we will show a film at the Aurora Fire Museum, which is in Aurora, Illinois. So if you live nearby and you were unaware of the fact that there's a film society here, there is, because shockingly, Aurora, which is the second biggest city in Illinois, does not have an actual film theater that like they regularly show movies. So we're almost the closest thing. And so, like I said, we choose these 12 movies and, again, like a magazine, you kind of trust the people who make it, who curate it and edit it. And you may not like every issue you get, but you'll probably like it enough that you're like, well, that's cool. I saw something I wouldn't have seen. And that's kind of the idea, is we're trying to create a space for people, a community where people can watch films, whether they be classics or popular cutting edge films, but mainly movies that you just wouldn't see in a theater setting. Even if they're modern, you just wouldn't necessarily be able to find them, or better yet, you may not know to find them because you've never even heard of them, which is the hope.
Yeah.
Our tagline is movies you never knew you needed to see. So, you know, and so we do, like I said, 12 a year, every third Thursday. And it's very fun. We're actually right now it's June, so we're beginning the process of choosing the movies for 2025, believe it or not, because we have to get the licensing clearances for everything, and we have to get enough advertising ahead of time so people know. And it's a really fun and sometimes hotly contested project between the board members. There's seven of us, and it's a really exciting thing because you never know what people are going to bring. What six movies are they going to bring to the show? You know, like, you're like, oh wow, I would have never thought of that, or I've never heard of this, or whatever. So
that's
so that's aurorafilmsociety.org.
If you're in the area, join up and see some movies that you didn't know that you needed to see.
Yes,
perfect. Thank you again. You know, I might actually be seeing you in a few weeks. We might be hanging out in person. So we'll talk more film at that point, I think.
Absolutely.
Awesome. I hope you guys enjoyed this film-heavy episode. And until next time, this is Spencer dispensing information. Goodbye.